take a nap. Now is the time. My mother was a genealogist, and I inherited all her paper files, 24 boxes. And it took me several years to go through them and put them into my computer file. And I had known from mother's talking that we had stout ancestors. And so at some point, I began to think, well, am I kin to Rex Stout? And I suspect you know that I wouldn't be standing here talking to you today unless the answer was yes. And so, yes, I am a cousin of Rex Stout. But what I want to do today is talk about people way back in time, some of Rex Stout's immigrant ancestors. And as you'll see at the end, this has a very local context here in New York. So this is from John McAleer's book. On page 2, he shows you a portion of the family tree of Rex Stout. And so here is Rex Stout with his brothers and sisters, and 9 generations back. And this is his mother, and some of his mother's ancestors, and his father, and some of the father's ancestors. I don't expect you to look at that or comprehend any of that, other than that you've got those 2 branches of the family tree. And this is 9 generations here. If you were to go back and put every one of his ancestors back 9 generations, there would be 256 people up there. We're not going to talk about 256 people today. I'm going to talk about 6 people back in time. We'll first talk about these 2, then their daughter and her husband, and then we'll spend most of the time talking about the first Stout in America over here and his wife that gave rise to the Rex Stout's family. So we'll start here with these 2 individuals, then these 2, and then finally those 2. Again, and I've reproduced the figure, we're talking about those 2 individuals, Joshua and Ann Hoops. They grew up in Yorkshire, England, and were married there. And Ann died in Yorkshire before her husband sailed to America. So he sailed as a widower to America in 1683. And settled in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and was a prominent Quaker. Now, many of the family were Quakers, so there's an important Quaker background to Rex Stout. And so this is, I'm sure there were many others, but this is one prominent Quaker in his ancestry. And Joshua died in 1723. So that's all I'm going to say about them, except that their daughter is next. She was an immigrant. Obviously, Ann died and is not an immigrant. But their daughter, who is there, is on the next slide, Margaret Hoops. She was born to that couple in Yorkshire and came to America. And it's uncertain about whether she came with her father on the same ship or not. But it's believed that that's likely that she came also in 1683. Now we're going to get to her husband, John Todd Hunter. Now, you're probably aware that Rex's mother's family had the name Todd Hunter. And so he was born in Cumberland, England, and the family name literally means fox hunter. That's from German, Todd, meaning fox. So these were a family of fox hunters. And they came to America, he came to America in 1687, and settled again in Pennsylvania. So again, a Pennsylvania connection here. Also a Quaker. And he married Margaret Hoops, whom we've already seen, and he died in 1715. So those are 4 of the ancestors. 3 of these were actually immigrants in those days. And now I'm going to switch to the other side of the family tree, and we're going to spend much more of our time talking about the other side of the family tree. So we're in the top left of the family tree over here, and we're going to first talk about the wife of that couple, Penelope Kent, who will be the most interesting person I will tell you about today. She was born in 1622 in Amsterdam. Now, it's believed that she was English, born of English parents who were living in Amsterdam. There's some controversy about this, differing accounts in the records. but it's believed that she was English, born in Amsterdam. She married, when she was about 18, a man named Mr. Van Princes. So we don't know his first name. But then, shortly after they were married, they migrated to America. They sailed from Amsterdam to America in 1642. So this is earlier than the other people that we've talked about. And their ship was stranded in a violent storm off Sandy Hook. All right, so just to orient you here, here's Manhattan, here's Long Island, here's the New York-New Jersey line, and this is Sandy Hook, New Jersey. And so their ship had almost reached port, a storm came up, and there was a shipwreck. And all the passengers made it safely to shore. As far as we know, everybody, certainly they did, and it's believed that all the other passengers did. And many of those people decided, well, we're here stranded in the middle of nowhere. We've got to get to the other settlers in New Amsterdam, New York City. And so they went around through New Jersey to try to get to New Amsterdam. But Penelope and her husband remained behind because he was either ill or injured. There are two different accounts of this. And so they sheltered in the woods here on Sandy Hook, in the woods near Spermaceti Cove. So we know exactly, so the shipwreck was somewhere off Sandy Hook, and the other settlers came down and went around, all the way around to New Amsterdam. And they were stranded here in the woods because he was either ill or injured and couldn't travel. Now the story gets more interesting. They were attacked by Indians, and Van Princes was killed. And Penelope was badly wounded. She had her skull fractured, her shoulder sliced, her abdomen sliced, and she was partially disemboweled. And so this was, and she was left for dead. The Indians assumed she was dead, as you would anybody that received injuries like that. She even made it into Ripley's Believe It or Not. I found this in my mother's paper files. So this was April 22nd, 1962. Penelope Van Princes after, yeah, okay. So she's, as you'll see later, she is famous. She is a famous person. All right. She crawled into a hollow tree with all these severe injuries, and all she had to eat was the fungi growing on the tree and the tree gum, the sap from the tree. And she survived inside the hollow tree for several days. And then some Indians came along hunting a deer, and the Indians, they're different, slightly different versions of the story. Two Indians found her. The young Indian said, let's kill her. The older Indian said, no, she's wounded. Let's take her back to the village. Well, he also won the argument. They took her back to the village near Middleton, New Jersey, present Middleton, New Jersey, and they nursed her back to health. So she obviously survived. I wouldn't be telling you about her if she hadn't survived this ordeal. And then eventually, after a while, some Dutch settlers visited the village, found her, and she left the Indians and went back to New Amsterdam. So we'll leave her for a moment and continue the story with Richard Stout, whom she's going to meet momentarily. So let's go to Richard Stout, the last individual I want to talk to you about. Richard Stout, who was on that initial family tree up here, was from Nottinghamshire, England, and he came to America in about 1632. The story goes that there was a family quarrel. He was angry at his parents, and there's one supposition that he was over a girlfriend. So he left home, and two different versions of this story. He either joined or was pressed into the British Navy, as many people were then. If you went to a port, you were like, you were a young man, they were going to grab you and press you into the Navy. So he served for 7 years, made it to America, and then two slightly different versions here. He's either discharged or he jumped ship in New Amsterdam. And in the records show in 1643, he was in New Amsterdam, employed by Governor William Kieft as a soldier at Fort Monmouth. in Monmouth, New Jersey. So he's in the records, he's, you know, official records here as in 1643. Also in 1643, he appears in the records as one of 39 patentees. A patentee is somebody that has a patent, that is legally entitled to own land by the government, in Gravesend on Long Island. And he had a 20-acre farm and was raising tobacco. So, you know, 1643, the records are still there about Richard Stout. So, also in about 1643, he came to New Amsterdam from Manhattan, and there he met Penelope. All right, so you can guess what happened next. They got married in Gravesend, and about 20 years later, there's a record that Richard and 20 other settlers sailed from Gravesend over to Monmouth County, New Jersey, to purchase land from the Indians. So there's a record of this. And a couple years later than that, he was one of 12 patentees of Monmouth County. And this is, for those of you that have studied this, this is apparently a famous, the famous Monmouth patent. And so he was one of 12 people that took up land there, and that's recorded as, you know, early settlers of Monmouth County, New Jersey. And to follow him up, there's a good bit known. He was one of the surveyors of Middleton, of present Middleton, New Jersey, in 1667. It's recorded as having done that. Then the next year, he and Penelope moved from Gravesend to Middleton and took up land that was on, their plantation was on the Hop River. And here is the course of the Hop River. It's obviously completely built up now, but the Hop River runs through here. There's current Middleton and the Hop River. All right. Now, here's an enlargement of that. And here is, it's shown on Google Maps as Hop Brook. Google Earth is Hop Brook, all right? So the brook runs right through here. This is in Holmdel. Any of you know Holmdel, New Jersey? This building, within this oval parking lot, that very large building is the former AT&T Bell Labs building in Holmdel. It's vacant now. But that was the big Bell Labs facility in Holmdel. So they lived there on Hop River. They had 10 children. You know, she not only survived the Indian attack, she got married, but she had 10 children. All right. And the son from whom Rex descends is Peter. I descend separately from two different other brothers. Okay, so I don't descend, my line separates here from Rex Stout's line. I descend from Benjamin and Richard Stout, who were brothers of Peter. Okay, so, and Richard died, can you imagine living to 94 in those days? All right? Now, if you think that's something, let me tell you about Penelope. She lived to 110, and when she died, she had 502.
You have proof of that.
I don't have proof. This is, you know, much of this, you ask about proof. There are many of these things that are in the official government records, but these are mostly family stories. So this was quite a gal. Okay. She's famous in New Jersey. They struck a medallion in her honor. This by this artist, Donald DeLuy.
Wow.
I haven't seen this, and my search on the internet indicates there's only one of these things in existence, and it's in Monmouth County. Here she is in the Benjamin, and here's another view of her. She's famous in New Jersey history. Now, their grandson, David, lived on Stout family land. Now here's Hop Brook, here's the Bell Labs office.
Next year.
And he built a house, and we know the address where his house was. This is the grandson. The address is 78 Crawford's Corner Road. That circle shows you where that is. And better yet, battery's getting weak, I guess. Okay, there's close up of where the house is, and there's a picture of the house. This is David Stout's home.
Okay.
And that's where Penelope died.
Thank you.
When she was 110 in 1732, and where she was buried okay. on that land. This picture is in a 1968 book, and this is mm-hmm. the original part of the house. This is David Stout's mm-hmm. home. Mm-hmm. This is a post-revolutionary okay. addition.
Right.
This big addition.
Yeah, don't worry.
This is the house where Penelope okay. lived and died. There at 78 Crawford's Corner Road. There was a historical highway marker there. Penelope Stout, famous pioneer woman, survivor of Indian attack, later wife of the founder of Middleton, buried on this farm, 1732. Okay, now the story turns sad. Now, that house
was there in 2010.
Torn down just a few years ago.
Oh my gosh.
By the current owners of the land, despite a lot of effort. You can go on the web and put in her name and look for this house, and you can find records on the web of local historians trying to save this house because they knew it was famous. But they failed. The current owners tore the house down. The marker has disappeared that I showed you a picture of. I've got a picture of you there. That marker, the Monmouth County Historical Society doesn't know where that marker is. I've inquired, they don't know where it is. The present owner removed a plaque that was on the facade of the old house, and they won't say anything. Monmouth County Historical Society, this is a quote from them, at least the owners are not friendly to history. They don't care, they don't want to see us coming and trooping on their land, okay? And we better here. There's the new house on the site.
Oh,
nice mansion on the site.
Mansion, yeah.
You can go. I haven't been there. This comes from Google Earth. You can find most things on Google Earth. So that's the end of my story. I'm sorry I can't take you there on a field trip. We could go there. We could drive by, but I don't think we want to walk on that plane.
You're picking it.
Okay, so thank you. I would be glad to answer any questions.
Wasn't that made your 14th cousin three times removed?
Oh, I did. Nine times removed, yes.
Yes, you were talking about things that you have proof for. Presumably, it's more likely that we have proof of when she died, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so. It's possible that her birth date's not accurate, right?
Yes, it's possible that it's not. But you know, there are, for those things that I've quoted, there are two versions of many of these things.
Uh-huh.
And you read all the different accounts, and none of these are official government records. These are family stories or in history books or history of the county. And you get alternate versions. If you read all of them, you say, well, this one says one thing, and this one says mm-hmm. another. And so they're differing versions of her birth date, but the migration date and the marriage date is pretty clear.
It's pretty clear, right.
Those are pretty,
that gives you a real good
yeah, that, narrow. Yes, that to me clinches it. I'm convinced I'm convinced that what I've given you is the best version of all the different alternatives.
Because if she was married at that particular year, she couldn't have been younger than probably 13 or 14.
Yes, yes.
At worst.
And so it was 18 or 20 is the way I thought.
And she couldn't have been born after her mother died, and we know when she died.
Yes.
Sometimes they do have a lot of these dates recorded in the family Bible, which was
yes, that's where that
considered very accurate.
Yes.
Baby. Sarah was born on whatever the date was.
Yes. And I don't know, I don't recall if there is mention of a family Bible or if there is where it is now. Because you know, that's a very long time.
Yeah.
You, one, two. Yes,
I believe you said she was married there.
She is. It was she's buried on what was her grandson's property, which is probably a bigger area than just the lot where this new house is.
So certainly there's some marker.
No, that's all, you know, it's all gone.
Aren't the remains
honored? Ones that are, you know, that far gone and with people having moved away, there's no record of where that grave is. And, you know, it could be on the Bell Labs property. where they, you know, everything was landscaped. You know, graves that old.
Very, very high.
Yeah, and so, okay, okay, yeah, okay, yes, yes.
I was going to say, around 1900, in my family, they went around and visited many of the older ancestors, and we buried them in a new family plot. So it's not a plot for that happened at all.
So it's I've looked on the internet and haven't found, or in books too. And I've been to a Quaker library that has lots of books about Quakers and there's. Yeah. So. Okay, thank you.